It's 1:38 and we are back from executive session. We will call roll. Dr. King.
Present.
Dr. Bustillo.
Here.
Dr. Hike.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Ms. Cardoza.
Present.
Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
And I'm Judy Chappius. All are present. Dr. King.
Okay, we're back in regular session, and we've gone through pretty much all of the allegations. I want to make sure that there are no further questions that any of the board members have for Dr. Kimpton before we move into closing statements. Is there anything else that we need to know or discuss?
There was the one on consent, so I just wanted to make sure that for that allegation that was addressed appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that in the when we were talking about sexual misconduct, but if you have more questions about that, go for it.
I can't think specifically of one when we were going over the allegations.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure that we addressed that one specifically, so
thank you
for the clarification. Anything come to mind?
Are there any other questions about any of the investigative findings or any questions for Mindy that you need clarification on? Okay, hearing none, then we will move into offering Ms. Kent or Dr. Kimpton an opportunity to make a closing statement.
Thank you, Dr. King and members of the board. I am going to address a closing statement with regard to AP, and my colleague Philip will address a closing statement with regard to patient BO. Okay. However, I am urging the board to consider as they deliberate and make recommendations to offer some sort of resolution in regards to all of the matters independently so that some sort of a consent agreement could be offered to Dr. Kimpton and we could narrow the issues if necessary at a formal hearing. So I don't know if you have questions about that. I think it's pretty straightforward what I'm asking for, but that would be very helpful. In regard to patient AP, the evidence just simply does not carry the burden of proof in this case. The burden of proof requires actual evidence of sexual misconduct, and there's absolutely no evidence in any of the items that we discussed that show A, that Mr. Kimpton made sexual advances to AP. No evidence that he requested a sexual favor of AP. No evidence that he engaged in verbal conduct or physical contact of a sexual nature. There's really no evidence at all of any intent to engage anything inappropriate from AP. I respect that she states she felt uncomfortable and that's what she told her friend. And I believe that Mr. Kimpton has since realized how important it is to be very, very clear with all patients about sensitive areas. And I think that has already been corrected. And I think that's supported by the recent records that the board has in their possession. There's no evidence that he intentionally viewed or a completely or partially disrobed patient. There's really no evidence to substantiate the allegations of 324410. I have to point out, as I pointed out to you a long time ago, this complaint was made more than 8 months after the alleged incident. It doesn't make sense from a reasonable person standard that a patient who believed that she was sexually assaulted would continue to see the therapist not once, not twice, but over 17 times after the alleged incident. There's no dates and times that corroborate these allegations, which are fairly horrific. And so it just doesn't support the reasonable person standard. And I've tried to, just as a lawyer for Dr. Kempton, tried to understand how the patient could come up with this perception. And the only thing I could glean is what's contained in her interview. She was taking 20 milligrams of hydrocodone a day and then morphine and using medical marijuana, and she was heavily medicated. And I also believe that the fact that this is a patient who has suffered sexual trauma in the past probably affects her perception of whatever therapeutic modalities Dr. Kempton instituted. In terms of the other allegations, Dr. Kempton has already agreed that his documentation needs a improvement, and he's already taken classes for that. We would recommend that that allegation be dismissed because it's been ameliorated since that time. I don't know if you can make a finding that Dr. Kempton has improved his documentation, and if we need to do additional chart review, I'm in favor of that. He's explained that he has learned a lot about supervision of physical therapists and aides, and that he's operating his practice in compliance with the standard of care. So I would offer that you issue a penalty for ARS 32-20444 in the form of a payment or decree of censure. I would ask that you not sustain the allegation. I'm sorry, in regards to 32-4046, I ask that you issue either a letter of concern or a decree of censure. And I do not believe that the evidence supports ARS 32-20-4413 regarding fraudulent billing. I do think that Dr. Kempton has admitted that he failed to maintain adequate patient records, and we would again ask for some sort of consent agreement in regards to the discipline that would be offered for that. In regards to 32-20-4422, the evidence has not sustained that based on the testimony, and you have to incorporate, because we didn't go over it in great detail today, the response, the written response, which is quite comprehensive and lengthy.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Ms. Kent, is that?
No, finally, I want to say this. I think it's important to note that the psychosexual evaluation did not find active sexual misconduct, did not support a finding of actual sexual misconduct, and did not support a finding of that. At best, there was a concern about risk, which could be addressed through current evaluation and therapy. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
As it relates to complaint number 2228 with BO, I think it's important to point out the specific inconsistencies between what BO told the Mesa Police Department and what's included in her complaint to the board. So if the board will allow it, I would like to read a few sentences from the police report, a few sentences from the complaint, and then I would ask the board to allow or to play the interview video between Minnie Richardson and BO from 20 minutes, 20 seconds to 20 minutes, 40 seconds. Would you allow that death to occur?
Mr. Harris?
Madam Chair, members of the board, that's entirely up to the board's discretion. If they think there's value in rehearing it, I'll defer to the board and the consensus of the board members.
Board members, do you, out of courtesy, want to listen to the recording?
I know it's all very long, but we've already heard it once, and I would just prefer he just tell us what it says.
Okay, thank you. I've heard it more than once, so definitely prefer a summary.
Agreed.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you all. So the Mesa Police Department says, quote, the therapist fondled the base of both her breasts underneath her bra and in the area of the bra underwire approximately four times during the session. That is not supported by what is alleged in the complaint. On page 25 of the investigative report, it says, quote, on this day, the next thing he did was to move my shirt out of the way a little bit. And in my mind, I first thought that was a little different, but thought, okay, maybe there was a reason for this. And then he moved my bra strap out of the way up by my collarbone, and his hand was under my shirt and bra strap. And then he slid his hand down to where it was down, right where the breast tissue is at the very top of where the breast is. So that is what is in the complaint. And the video, the 20-second portion of the video at 20 minutes, 20 seconds to 20 minutes, 40 seconds, describes what is similar to what's in the complaint, not what's in the Mesa Police report. Mindy specifically asked, she puts her hands up to the top of the breast region where the pectoralis minor is, and she asked Bethany, Yo, specifically, did he ever touch anywhere below there? And she says, I don't believe so. So that is directly contradictory to the Mesa Police report, which talks about fondling the base of both of her breasts. So I think that's important to note when you assess credibility of a witness and you try to derive the truth of what occurred, because inconsistent statements lower credibility of testimony. So when considering everything as a whole, including the inconsistent statements, we ask that the board find that there is no sexual misconduct under ARS 32-20-44-10 and that disciplinary action is not necessary.
Thank you. Okay, at this time, the board will go into deliberations. I just want to remind everyone that during this time, it'll be the board discussing thoughts and testimony and investigative reports. So I just ask that we not be interrupted during the discussions. Okay.
My only request is that should the board just want to discuss items that were addressed in the psychosexual evaluation, that be maintained confidentially.
Understood. Yes. Thank you. So I would just ask as we go through these, because there are several allegations, if we can just go through them allegation at a time, kind of by the bucket list that we discuss them in, that might be helpful for our discussions and determining.
Sorry, thought you were done.
Whether they're substantiated. Go, Josh.
In reviewing this case, and I said this earlier, I think that we need to take this to a formal hearing. I think we are dealing with very serious allegations, and I don't agree with Mr. Kempton's attorneys that these are unsubstantiated. I think these are very, very troubling allegations. And so my recommendation would be to offer Mr. Kempton a consent agreement. And if he does not accept the consent agreement, to be invited to a formal hearing. because I think these do rise to the level of suspension and revocation. And what that consent agreement should be, I think there's been considerable work done by Mr. Kempton, and I acknowledge that, but I think there's still a ways to go. And I don't know, what does everyone else think? Because if you guys disagree with me, I'll stop.
No, I am inclined to agree with you in that my inclination is to move to a formal hearing. I share your concern. I know that Mr. Kempton's attorneys have talked about inconsistent statements and the delay, and I get that. I'm open to it. To be honest, I am. These are really serious allegations, and so I am trying really hard to understand kind of both sides of this experience. But I see the claims that there's some kind of inconsistency. I also see a lot of inconsistencies on the side of Mr. Kempton. And, you know, it seems like to me at best, this is a case of like the worst case scenario consequences for really, really bad, or a large lack of telling your patient what you're doing. And, I'm concerned that it goes a lot further than that. And so I would agree with you.
Is that your second to the motion?
Well, I haven't made a motion yet.
Here I don't think there's a motion on the table.
Oh, I thought you made a motion.
Well, let me make a motion.
Okay.
I move that we offer Mr. Kempton a consent agreement, a disciplinary consent agreement that consists of 2 years probation without the option of early termination, that he would abide by the recommendations of Dr. Leclerc as stated in the psychosexual evaluation, that he complete the Pro-B course or another similar course dealing with sexual boundaries approved by the board. And I think that's probably it. I think that the document, probably a chart review. I don't know if we need a chart review. I know we need a chart review. I don't know if we need, we need someone to look at whether the improvements of the chart that Mr. Kempton has stated have been made. And so I don't know how to formulate that, because if we look at the charts and determine, or if someone looks at the charts and determines that the improvements have been made, I don't know if I need him to continuing to review them.
Are you suggesting monitoring, perhaps?
Yes. But I wanted to say maybe the engaging of affiliated monitors to do an evaluation to determine whether a chart review is necessary, or if that's something we can do in-house. Mr. Harris, what do you think? My concern is, yes, it's been a long time. He's already made a lot of changes. I want someone to look at his charts to see if he actually has made the changes that he's made. And if he has, I'm really okay with it. If they find there's still room for improvement, I'd want a continued chart review.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like we would want to include a term that requires him to engage the services of a monitor for purposes of conducting a practice audit. And if there are no issues identified in the audit, then we're good. And if there are, then he would need to comply with the recommendations of the auditor.
Perfect. Exactly how I was going to say it before you interrupted me.
Sorry.
And so let me restate my motion. So offer a consent agreement that adopts the findings of facts and conclusions of law stated in the investigative report. 2 years probation in which Mr. Kempton will continue to abide by the recommendations stated in the psychosexual evaluation without an option for early termination. Completion of the Pro B course or other similar course approved by the board that discusses sexual boundaries, and engaging a monitor to conduct an audit in abiding by the terms of the audit as necessary. That is my question.
Would he continue to practice with a chaperone when he's working with female patients?
That is, I believe that's consistent with the psychosexual evaluation.
Yep.
So just to be clear, Mr. Groom, members of the board, it is going to incorporate the current terms of the ICA, the counseling, the chaperone.
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you.
So, Josh, I agree with everything that you're looking at. I really would like a several month or monitoring of documentation. I feel like there were so many issues, practice issues that were identified beyond the alleged sexual misconduct that is almost more of a concern to me than the original allegations. And I really want to see major changes in his documentation.
And does that get captured in this audit that I've discussed? Because he said he's in.
If we can identify some of the terms, or if I can help you identify some of the terms that I would like to see, then maybe, yeah, I can live with that if we can capture that.
Yeah, and please help me capture that, because that's what I was going for, because I share the same concerns. But I've also heard Mr. Kempton saying that he's made a lot of improvements since then.
Right. And I just want to see it.
No one's verified that. And so what I'm envisioning, and I think Mr. Harris said it very eloquently, is he engages a monitor to perform a practice audit, and then he's going to abide by the recommendations of that audit. And I don't know what kind of instruction we provide the auditor, if any. I think that's why I'm looking to you to help there.
Yeah. I mean, if you, do you want it right now, or do you want it?
Yeah, when we
do
I want it right now.
So, okay. So what I want to see is an initial evaluation through a completion of treatment, including a discharge summary of several body parts, of something that's spine related, of something that's a peripheral joint related, so that there's different areas. I have this concern that we've seen similar treatment for problems that should have different treatments and goals and outcomes. And so I just want to see that there's differences. Capturing different body parts can help us do that. And there has to be a period of looking at charting over time.
And I agree with you. And not just charting, but just full practice management. He's denying that he bills Medicare for services that Medicare is very clear on skilled interventions by a therapist, and he's got text working with the patients. I mean, just there's so many things about all the things that have been uncovered beyond the sexual misconduct that are, for me, really concerning. And he's talking about his practice is growing, and if it's growing in the way that he's currently been running it, it does not represent the physical therapy profession as we would like it, or as is outlined in our practice act, honestly.
hate to be a stickler for procedure, but I'm not sure if we have a second.
I'll second you.
Thank you. The goal here is to allow Mr. Kempton to continue practicing as long as he's safe, as long as the public is safe. And that's kind of what we're shooting for, and give him some time to really continue to rehabilitate himself and correct so these kind of things don't happen again. And so that's kind of the goal of the consent agreement, is to give him a way that he can continue practicing, and we're sure that the public is protected. So
I do want to ask, and I will ask Mr. Harris, if we can, since we're going down the road of disciplinary, disciplinary findings. I want to ask Mr. Harris a question, and then I want to ask another question.
Sure.
Go ahead, Mr. Harris.
I was just going to say, maybe what we can do, since we're going down the path of this of a proposed consent agreement, if we can take it in two motions. One is just to adopt the findings of facts and conclusions of law as set forth in the investigative report, and then if perhaps we could identify, are we adopting all of the alleged violations or just some of them? And if it's all, that's fine, then we don't need to be that specific because it referenced in the report. But if there's some that you don't believe should be included, then if we can identify those to make sure that they don't end up in the consent agreement, that would be great. So if we could just start with one motion just to adopt the findings and conclusions.
And I'll let Dr. King ask her questions, but you know, my view is for the consent agreement, I tried to look through this investigative report to see what I could take out, and I didn't find anything that I wanted to take out. And so I'm not doing it because it's easier. It's just because.
All right. Let's do a motion. I know we already have a motion in a second. Can we do another motion in a second, or do we have to pause on that?
Let me withdraw my motion.
Okay.
And I want to be clear, we're not adopting the findings of facts and conclusions of law for the purposes of imposing discipline at this time. We are adopting them to provide clarity in the consent agreement that we are offering. If Mr. Kempton declines to accept the consent agreement, I believe we will be inviting him back to a formal hearing in which we will have to establish the allegations. But I would move to it for the purposes of the consent agreement to include an adoption of the findings of fact and conclusions of law stated in the investigative report. And all of them. I don't think there's anyone that I want to take out. If you want me to go through and identify them all, or is that good enough?
No, I think for purposes of drafting the consent agreement, that's sufficient.
Okay.
Second.
For purposes of clarification here, I know this was initially, this was two cases and then it was combined. When I'm looking at the 2022 complaint, are those allegations all the allegations in both, or are we talking about both the initial reviews? Because I think there are separate allegations in the first one that may not have made it into the second.
That's correct. Some of them overlap, and then there are some identified in one and not in the other.
Okay.
I haven't seen I wanted to keep out.
Okay. So you're saying all the allegations in both 21 and 22.
Yes.
And as a point of clarification, is the consent agreement is a disciplinary action? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And so I'm curious then, before we take a vote, have there been any prior actions by the board?
And that's a great question, but if we could just entertain, if we could vote on this motion,
okay,
then pause to hear from board staff to see if there's any priors before determining what is the appropriate discipline to include into the consent agreement. That would be great.
I got you. I thought he had rolled into one. Okay, so we're just voting on findings of fact and conclusions of law?
At this point, yes.
To include in the consent agreement?
Yes.
Understood. Judy, you want to call the vote?
You're muted. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to adopt all findings of facts and conclusions of law as set forth in the investigative reports for both 2131 and 2228. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. Before we move into the consent agreement, disciplinary action, that sounds like we're all leaning toward, I do want to ask board staff if there have been any prior actions by the board on Dr. Kimpton's license or practice.
If the board is okay, I can provide some background in that area.
Please.
Case 1907, Stephen Kimpton. In March of 2019, a patient filed a complaint alleging that Mr. Kimpton made sexual comments and viewed and touched her breasts during the initial evaluation. She immediately reported to the board. The board moved the case to an informal hearing that took place on August 27th of 2019. And after that hearing, they moved to issue Mr. Kimpton an advisory letter. The letter states in part, the board formally advises you that you should explain and demonstrate proposed treatment to patients prior to palpation of sensitive areas, obtain verbal consent prior to palpating sensitive areas, leave the treatment room door open, and ensure that the patient knows that they have the option to have a female present in the room during the examination or treatment. This letter serves as a formal advisory statement to you that conduct under scrutiny could result in such determination by the board in the future in a different case involving different facts or circumstances. This letter is a non-disciplinary action advising a licensee or certificate holder that particular practices should be modified or eliminated, as a continuation of those actions has the potential to result in board disciplinary action against the licensee or certificate holder. An advisory letter is a public document that may be used in future disciplinary actions against a licensee or certificate holder, but it is not appealable.
Mindy, what year was that in?
2019. The informal hearing was August 27th of 2019.
I just want to discuss as a board the fact that there have actually now been, there's three. One that's non-disciplinary, and two that are now in front of us again with similar allegations. So I don't want to underestimate that he was asked to make those changes back then and clearly didn't, and we've since had two more complaints. So I want us to talk about an appropriate action for this licensee.
I still think, you know, I think a practice audit is even more necessary now. I think the Pro B course is even more necessary now, or similar course. And I think adhering to the existing recommendations in the psychosexual report are important.
I hear you, Josh. We have three women who have had the same complaint by the same PT.
I understand.
It's very egregious, and it's incredibly concerning. And they're totally separate, yet the same thing.
Yeah, and Dr.
I don't know that I can support that. I really am feeling much more strongly about his fitness to practice, honestly.
And that's, this is my concern as well. I I am loath to look at removing somebody's right to practice because I get it. We're talking about Mr. Kempin's livelihood here, and I'm concerned about that, and it pains me to look at that. But I am really concerned about the sexual misconduct allegations. Uh-huh. And the fact that there's a previous one makes me even more concerned. That does, and I am not sure, I mean, I don't know what we can do short of probation to ensure his fitness to practice. And so I think that may be worth a discussion among us here because I'm concerned that just putting him on probation for any amount of time is all we're doing is we're putting pause on what appears to be consistent violations, and that concerns me. I agree with Mr. Greer, and I want to give Mr. Kempin a chance to keep practicing and fix these problems. And I'm concerned that, I mean, I'm not concerned. I know that a revocation of his license is not going to allow him that opportunity. It's going to end it. And so that is kind of where I am. I'm curious what the board thinks about whether there are either continuing education units or evaluations or trainings that might be able to end this type of issue. Because again, I'm really worried about it.
Ms. Kent started her opening statement by talking about, imagine if you had something like this, a complaint against your license with these allegations. And he did. And we made very firm, clear recommendations about how to avoid this in the future for him, of which he implemented none. And so if past behavior helps me predict future behavior, I have nothing to go on. He's already been in front of the board for the same thing. We made very clear recommendations as to how to improve his practice and protect the community, of which he did none. And now we've had two more.
One of the things we did in the regulatory workshop was to reiterate the mission statement. And when we look at the mission statement, which I know you all know, but we look at the three components of protecting the public from the incompetent, unprofessional and unlawful practice of physical therapy. So if we ask about Mr. Kempin in terms of incompetent, is he incompetent? Is he unprofessional? And is he unlawful? And I think the things that we've looked at so far would say, yeah, actually he's all three of those in terms of we have evidence of that. So it's our mission to protect the public from that.
And I agree with you, Dr. Hike. I think the question in my mind is, how do we protect the public from that? Is it something that we can rehabilitate, that we can take some kind of disciplinary action here that makes us confident we can rehabilitate via a consent agreement? Or do we need to move this to a formal hearing and look at what the result is going, are we looking at the ultimate sanction? I think that's the question that I'm mulling over and trying to figure out.
And in terms of rehabilitating, do we have any evidence today suggesting that he has already done so? Has he followed the ICA?
Yes.
He wasn't consistent in following the ICA.
No, he was not.
And he's categorically denied, and he doesn't agree with the findings of psychosexual evaluation that he has a problem. So these are the things, right? What we want for him and what he's showing us are two different things in my mind. And I certainly take our licensure and the value of that more than you know. But I also take the responsibility that comes with our licensure and the responsibility to protect the public and provide the best care, not just to our clients, but to the payers who are paying for their services, of which I'm not seeing with him either. And I don't know that he's even aware of it because he's denying all of it. And so my preference would be to offer a consent agreement that he surrender his license, and if he doesn't do so, that we move to a formal hearing. Karen, what are your thoughts?
I was very concerned that the interim consent agreement was not followed. That bothered me quite a bit. This is, you know, an intelligent person that's supposed to be able to read, you know, read a document or have their attorney help them interpret a document that was given to them by us. And it wasn't followed for a number of months until we actually had to restate it. Now that I go back to here we are, we've had a third, well, it was originally the first problem back in 2019 with little regard for anything that the board had to say. I share your concern. I share your concern. I struggle with, you know, is he lawful? Is he competent? Is he, you know, capable of practicing? And, my opinion is kind of been downgraded to, I'm not sure that I want him doing it. Very sad.
Right. Yeah. So if we were to decide he's only to see males only, do you think that he would still follow the laws in terms of treating males only? I don't think so.
Right.
No, because I think he would be tempted if he had all the females on his PTA schedule and the PTA called out sick that day. I think he'd take them. Or he'd oversee them, and then any soft tissue would have to be him. So I think that's a very slippery slope. I have reread, re-listened, looking for any opportunity that he shows us that he really, really wants to do better, and I'm not seeing it. And the fact that his first ICA was in July and it was in November that he asked for clarification on the chaperone, I mean, yeah. You know how I feel about it, in my opinion, my professional clinical licensee community person's opinion is that this person is not fit to practice physical therapy. So I'll make a motion that we offer in a consent agreement.
I think we've got a motion pending right now for Mr. Greer.
We've just moved to accept the findings of facts and conclusions of law for the consent agreement. I was about to make my motion.
Okay.
And I still will, I hear you, Dr. King. I don't think you're proposing a compromise. And so if that's what we're going to do, you're telling them, okay, surrender your license. That's it. You're done. If not, you've got to have to come back for a hearing. I don't disagree that he may not be competent now, but we do have a recommendation from the psychosexual doctor that if he's monitored, he's safe to practice. And so I would like to give him the chance to save his license. And so I don't agree with a consent agreement that is, hey, give up your license or we'll take it from you. I don't agree with that. I think if we're going to give him a consent agreement, we give him a way to keep his license. That's a compromise. And the question then becomes, what terms do we want to impose on him to ensure that the public is protected while he, learns to be a better physical therapist? So
I hear you, Josh. I honestly do. I just don't want a fourth victim to wonder why we compromised.
I hear you too.
I don't want that. And that's not going to be great. And I also want to be really clear that I'm not just talking about his fitness to practice around sexual misconduct.
Oh.
I'm talking about practice as a physical therapist running a practice that he owns. I've owned a practice. I know how all of that goes. And it's pretty egregious. So I just don't want to be stuck that it's just sexual misconduct. That is not at all what I'm saying when I say unfit. I'm not saying unsafe. I'm saying he's unfit. He doesn't meet our mission statement as far as competency and legal and things like that. So you can give him more chances. If we have another victim, what are you going to say?
So, Dr. King, I agree with you. And the question that I am mulling over is there some – because I hear what both of you are saying, and what I keep coming back to is there has got to be some way that we can, at least I hope, some way that we can preserve his chance to practice if he can fix this. Some way that we can preserve that and also ensure that this does not happen again. And that's what I'm just sitting here really mulling over, because to be honest, Mr. Greer, I hear your motion that I guess is coming, but it's not here yet. And I'm a little concerned it doesn't go far enough. Mm-hmm. But I also agree with Mr. Greer that Dr. King, I think if we just tell him, look, you're done, surrender your license. Part of our job is to encourage good behavior, right? And I hope that we can hit him hard enough here that we impress upon him the importance of the good behavior, with some kind of a disciplinary practice without saying, look, you're done, don't come back. And I guess that's where I am. And I'm trying to figure out kind of what we can do. My concern is monitoring the records may solve, or at least give us an opportunity to be aware of any continued practice problems, which I agree are a huge issue in this case. I don't know. I mean, maybe it is we do chaperoning and then some type of very significant education on sexual advances. I mean, it does, it's really, the third allegation is really concerning to me. It really changes the math a bit from my perspective.
And Dr. King, members of the board, if at any time you want to go into executive session for legal advice, I'd be happy to share thoughts with you.
Yeah, I think I would like to. I just want to make one more statement, though, Josh. It feels like we as a board are working harder to make sure he maintains his license than he was willing to. And so I just want to – he already knew. He had a complaint. He didn't put in that moment. The moment he was made aware of the second complaint, the first one for us, he didn't change. He didn't get a chaperone. He didn't change what he knew he was supposed to do from the first one. And now we ended up with another one. Do you get what I'm saying? So there's a pattern.
Yeah, I get it.
And so
I get it.
He's not willing to put into place what it takes to keep his license. But we're debating over and over about how we can help rehab him when he's not even willing to do it himself without us mandating it. Do you understand? Like, it's mandated court treatment. Do you know what I mean? Almost.
Yeah, I'm definitely sympathetic to that concern. That is a huge concern of mine, and that is my perspective on why the third allegation changes the math. I don't think it makes the other two that we're dealing with more or less believable. I think it just changes the math on if he had notice and knowledge that this was an issue, and he had notice and knowledge that these complaints were possible to be made, that concerns me that he didn't act. So I think given what we're talking about and given what we're kind of trying to deal with here, I would move that we go into executive session for Mr. Harris to give us some legal advice and then continue this discussion.
I second that. Judy, we have a motion and a second to go into executive session. Do you mind calling the vote?
You're muted. All right.
It's a long day.
I'm not good at being mute. It's been moved and seconded to go into executive session for legal advice. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bercio?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Motion passes. The recording will stop at 2:29.